So here I am, climbing in this moderately turbulent thermal over Monte Calliano.
We are approaching the sensitive part of the story now, so if you'd rather skip it, jump to this timestamp.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Paragliding Chat. I'm Harro Brouwer, your host. In this episode, I'm joined by Dmitry Balabanov, the man behind Paragliding XC Stories. Earlier this year, I came across one of his videos titled Detailed Paragliding Incident Report, 7 times twist, 2 times reserve. It's a fascinating and very honest breakdown of a serious incident that ended with not one, but 2 reserve deployments. The way Dmitry analyzed and shared the experience really caught my attention. After watching it, I knew I wanted to have Dmitry on the podcast. So let's get into it.
So yeah, I'm Dmitry, 42 years old, currently living in Munich. I'm an IT guy working in, you know, software development, clouds and stuff like that. That means I have quite some time on weekends to spend my time in the mountains, do paragliding or other beautiful things. I am single. I have no children. That also means I'm really flexible in my decisions where to go and when to start, when to depart. I can, for example, think about going to Bassano on 31st of December, just a couple of hours, before New Year's Eve, and decide to go somewhere. And that makes me fly so much, actually, because I'm not restricted by my wife. I'm not restricted by the children. Yeah, this is how I'm currently enjoying it.
When did you start paragliding?
I started 2015. Yeah, I did my course in year 2015.
And you run, among other things, the YouTube channel Paragliding XC Stories. What made you start it?
Well, I would say it was partly a coincidence. I worked quite a lot with video production and video recording during my time at the university and stuff like that. So I already knew how to, the basic stuff, how to edit the videos, how to record the videos. And when I started flying, I just bought the cheapest action cam available on the market. And I wanted to record the flights just for myself to see, how it looks like. Because at the beginning, it was very, a bit of stressful for me. And I just concentrated entirely on, on the things I needed to do in the air. But I didn't see much around me. And so I just wanted to kind of understand what happens around me during the flights. And so I bought this cheap camera and recorded all the flights. These were indeed short flights, like, 10, 15 minutes. And afterwards, I started to putting together, some summary videos about, my recent flights. And I uploaded the first one after a short trip to the town of Norma in Italy, near Rome. We had an adventure. There was a really, really bad week. We only flew one time throughout the whole week, and I managed to fly 40 minutes. That was my longest flight at that time. And so I recorded it, and then I put together a very boring video, 20 minutes, me soaring around left and right. Nothing happened in the video. Then I published it on YouTube and got maybe 30 views or something like that. And I thought, okay, that's it. But then at some point, I experienced quite an interesting story. So this was in Bassano. I needed to cross the big, big valley. And then after I arrived on the other side, I just needed a lot of time to find the next thermal, and it was very challenging, so I almost bombed out. But finally, after, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes of hard work, I managed to climb again and then complete my triangle. And then I created a short story about it, how I kind of, which decisions I needed to make and which things I tried and stuff like that. And then I showed it, uploaded it again to YouTube. And that video caught some attention and found some audience. And the people started commenting like, hey, nice stuff. Please continue. Do the other videos about something like that. And I thought, okay, maybe this is something I could work on. And then I started with publishing similar videos, some short stories, some short moments that tell something particular, kind of difficult part, or maybe some experience I just went through. And so from the beginning, the audience always grew. And at some point, I found myself making those very big effort videos explaining how to fly XC routes and stuff, whatever. So it kind of very natural development, I would say. And these are paragliding stories, and I'm flying XC, so the name was born, Paragliding XC Stories.
You describe it as all kinds of stories from a seasoned XC paragliding pilot. What does that mean to you?
I try to really to explain or to tell the personal experience of myself. I don't want this channel or my videos to be kind of to be instructional or to be I don't know to it's really something really personal to me, and it's really the way I fly, the way I feel, the way I solve a particular challenging situations, the way I choose to fly the XC routes. And so I just share my personal experience with the people. I don't want to be seen as an instructor or as an, you know, as a guy who just prescribes something. It's really something that I just wanted to share with the others, like what I did in a particular situation or how I did a particular flight. And the people just can decide whether they take this as a something useful or maybe just skip it.
In May, you uploaded a video titled Detailed Paragliding Incident Report, 7x Twist, 2x Reserve. Can you walk us through exactly what happened?
Okay, so I was flying in an area I know extremely well. With my equipment, I know extremely well, and actually the route I also know extremely well. So everything was quite okay, and I thought I was safe. I was ready for everything the current day could throw at me. But then something happened, and something completely unexpected happened. My wing got a huge collapse, which normally in turbulence, when you feel the air, you can always tell, okay, now something might happen, because the wing tells you what the air is around you, what's all about, no? Kind of, you feel the brake tension, all the movements, and you can predict a little bit, or at least in a way, a sense that might happen, something might happen. But this time, this collapse was completely unexpected for me. I just got caught by this surprise, and that led to a wrong control input from my side. So I ended up not being able to stop this huge surge. The wing shot just very aggressively, and I got twisted after that. After another surge that I couldn't stop again, I ended up in a particular situation. 40% of my wing was in a cravat, and I tried to stop the beginning auto rotation, which is the first thing you should do And while stopping that, I just stalled the flying part because it also was a bit turbulent in the air. And maybe I just, you know, didn't pull it correctly. And that immediately led to this 7 times twist and my brakes got locked. So I couldn't do anything anymore. So I ended up in this kind of rotation in a back fly or something like that. So the only thing I could do is to throw my reserve because there was nothing I could do anymore.
What kind of wing were you flying at that moment?
So at that moment I was flying my wing. I flew for more than 300 hours, I think. It was my high ANG BGD Diva 2, my usual wing. I actually only have one wing.
And where did you land? Because the place looked pretty exciting. A steep slope or so?
Yes, exactly. It was a steep slope, maybe some cliffs, even some cliffs with a lot of small trees around. So those trees actually saved my life, I would say, because my paraglider and my reserve got caught by those trees. And they just brought me to a soft stop, 50 centimeters above the terrain. It was a miracle, I would say, as I didn't got injured. I got lucky in that particular situation.
What made you decide to share your accident publicly in this way? I mean, did you have to think about it for some time?
Yes, that was actually a very difficult decision because... I already know that my channel has quite some audience and my videos get some views, maybe not too many, but still. And I was thinking about whether it is appropriate to share such a story. It's not the thing I usually share. Well, to be honest, I didn't have any incidents worth sharing until this time. Well, maybe one, but it was not so severe. As I mentioned, it was a difficult decision, but then I decided to do that because I also think that with my comprehensive analysis and all this stuff I explained in the video, all these things could maybe be a bit thought-provoking for the other folks, or maybe, you know, bring them a bit more information about just a random incident. So again, it's just my personal story. I didn't want to give recommendations or, you know, to be an instructor explaining go through every particular input mistake I made. My intention was just to share all the background, all the conditions, everything that led to that incident, and also the learnings I took away, I personally took away from all this story. So I think it might be just another thought-provoking story that may help other pilots in their flying. And I already actually got some feedback from others that they started to reconsider particular decisions in their flying career. So I think partly my video reached the goals I set for it.
And what kind of reactions did you receive after publishing the video?
Well, all kinds of reactions. As you expect, there were a couple of folks who tried to explain which mistakes I made and how I should have controlled my wing and stuff like that. Well, I actually know. But anyway, then there were folks that thanked me, and exactly these kinds of words really motivated me to continue making the videos, because if the people see something useful in the stuff I do, then it makes sense to do it further. Well, and yeah, I got overwhelmed by the comments, to be honest, because there were hundreds of comments, and usually my videos don't get so many comments. But this one, of course, it was a bit of, you know, a crash scene and a kind of controversial, maybe a story a bit or unusual. So I didn't manage to reply to each and every comment, to be honest. just too many.
In the video, we see that you're carrying two reserve parachutes and that you actually deploy both of them. Why was that necessary?
So, as I mentioned, I was in this kind of backfly rotation. I don't know, maybe spin-like rotation. It's difficult to describe. And that means that my sink rate was really, really low. Relatively. I think it was about 4 to 5 meters per second. And so when I threw my first reserve, this is a bit of an interesting thing. So I was in this rotation, and I did recall in my memory that my SAV trainer, my SAV instructor, told me in a very strange rotation, do not throw your reserve with full power because it will immediately get into the wing, entangled with the wing, and you will be in a big trouble. And so I thought, okay, I'm in a strange rotation. I do not want to shoot it with my full power. I do a moderate throw, and I did that. And that turned out to be actually a wrong decision because of this low sink rate. The reserve failed to open. It just started to float around.
What kind of reserve was it, the first one?
It was an X triangle. It's a triangular reserve. It's actually a steerable one. But you need to unlock it to get steerable. So it's not steerable by default, but you can enable it. But I don't think it mattered at that time because my second reserve also hesitated a bit. You can also see that in the video. It didn't open immediately. It didn't open immediately as well because, as I mentioned, the sink rate was just quite low, and also this rotation. It's difficult to describe in the 3D dimension. It would be something similar to a set rotation when the wing and the pilot rotate in different directions. And that means that whenever you throw the reserve, power will be eaten by the force, by the centrifugal force. So everything got kind of in the worst possible way, but still the second reserve did manage to open because maybe it was just easier because this triangular reserve maybe opens differently. I don't know why, but it worked in this way.
I also noticed comment saying this is exactly why you should carry two reserves. What is your view on that?
Well, when I started flying HOTA wings, like the C wings, ENC wings, and AND, I already knew that I would need two reserves just for my personal risk management. I employ my personal risk management, which includes this Swiss cheese model, defining different Swiss slices of cheese with the holes. And you need to place them behind each other in that way so that all the holes get covered by each other so you cannot look through, And one slice of this Swiss cheese model is having just two reserves because, if one reserve doesn't work for any reason, then I will have at least a second chance. And I thought personally for me that, getting or upgrading to an ENC wing is, risky enough for me to take two reserves with me. And so after upgrading to an ENC wing, it was even a three-liner at that time, but still, so I just bought a harness that had this ability to have two reserves on board.
As far as I know, most pilots only fly with one reserve.
Yes, that's true. But I just want to repeat, it was my personal risk management. I preferred it to do like that.
But would you say that everybody should, get two reserves?
I'm not an instructor, and I don't want to spread my own opinion on that. But You know, two chances is always better than one. I mean, and they are not really heavy currently. You know, there are reserves that weigh maybe below 1 kilo. So why not have another one? I think most harnesses on the market do have only one reserve compartment. It's okay, but I know everybody decides. We always optimize for something. If you optimize for weight, then maybe you need a light harness which only can fit one reserve and stuff.
Yeah. Well, this is an important discussion, of course. I mean,
yes,
the paragliding community.
I would also say if you do just relaxing evening flights with a easy wing in mild conditions, you probably will not need two reserves. But in any situation, as I mentioned, two chances are always better than a single one.
And the first time you ever threw your reserve, or actually two.
Exactly. So it was my first and my second time in the fair.
At the end of the video, you share several lessons learned. Having completed an SIV course is no guarantee. Having hundreds of flight hours is no guarantee. Flying familiar equipment is no guarantee. Flying in a familiar area is no guarantee. And listen to your gut feeling.
And it's throwing a reserve is a skill.
Yeah, the danger of being caught by surprise. That's an interesting, because when you're doing an SIV training, you know what you're going to do. But then you start, you know, flying again with friends, and it's another world.
You are absolutely right. And many SIV instructors also confirm that. In the training, you are in a controlled environment, I would say, because you induce something by yourself. You know what you are going to be training right now. You also have the instructor, which also helps a lot, because you know, you always have this plan B. If you don't understand something, you are sure that you will get a hint what to do or what not to do. But in the real life, when you are dealing with the turbulence, with the real conditions, the things might happen completely unexpectedly. And especially in a situation where you are focusing on something different. And exactly in this situation, it really doesn't matter what you know in theory. Every knowledge, I mean, when something hits really hard without you, like by surprise, then the only thing you can do, what your body will do, is something that you trained. And if you didn't train something, then your body will react by instinct. And instincts are most of the times not right in paragliding, because we do the things because we are not the flying creatures. We grew up on the earth, on the surface, and our instincts also are kind of in this direction. We always try to handle in this way. But in the air, you should be doing something completely different. And this is what really, really matters in this case. The problem is training these kinds of situations, like really hard and unexpected collapses, is really difficult, especially on the modern wings, especially on the two-liner wings, because you can't actually train collapses on a two-liner. You could buy these additional folding lines and install them and pull them to induce a collapse. But this collapse will have nothing to do with the real one, which will happen in your, you know, real flight. That's the problem. I mean, and who wants to train collapses? Nobody wants to train collapses. It's kind of, you know, we want to have good and nice flights, and we don't want to be overstressed by all this training. It's a very difficult subject, I think.
That's why you summarized the personal lessons you took away from this incident. And one of them is also the need for continuous training.
Yeah, the thing is, we first need to define what training is, because between the SIV courses, I actually train by myself a bit. I do some spins, I do some high wing overs, some pitch maneuvers and stuff like that. It helps a bit with understanding the wing and, you know, to feel all the stuff. But it still doesn't help to react correctly when your wing blows up completely unexpectedly. This is the problem. And I don't know if there is any way to train something like that. Behind my wing, you know, there is something that the pilots who fly the big planes tend to say, I'm behind my aircraft. That means that something happens quicker or faster than I can anticipate or than I can understand. And this is exactly what happened to me. Like, I tried to react to something my wing was doing, and I was a bit late. And I didn't anticipate what would happen next, because I was fully concentrated on handle a particular reaction at the particular moment. But I should have been thinking about actually the next steps. And I was in this single-threaded focused mode, and that was the problem. I have no idea if we can train something like that. Maybe some other folks, like the people who fly the records recently in the Alps, we almost broke the record with almost 400 kilometers triangle in the Alps. It's amazing. But with a really hot wing, the Nivuk iSpeak X1, it's a really demanding wing with an aspect ratio 8. I mean, if you fly stuff like that, well, you are really, really a nice pilot. Maybe such folks are just a bit different. Maybe they can handle that kinds of events. I don't know. So I'm not a professional. Paragliding is just my hobby. So this is everything I can tell you about it.
And trust your gut feeling.
Yes, this is also something very important. In the recent time, or maybe the last several months, I tried to suppress this gut feeling a bit because I thought maybe it's actually... So the thing is, I would just maybe explain the background of it. Initially, I didn't want to upgrade to an AND wing at all. So I wanted to stay in the ENC class. But then I tried an AND wing, and I just really liked the handling, like the way the wing behaves in the air. And I thought, okay, maybe if you are stepping up to a two-liner, maybe it's not a big deal to step up to a AND two-liner, because, you know, hot ANC, AND, they are very close. And so I did that. But all the time, I think I spent maybe over 500 hours under the hot AND wings. Maybe more. I think most of the time I wasn't still sure if that was my right decision, because from time to time I had this gut feeling that I'm not comfortable enough under this thing. I did manage to control everything, and I actually did have four big collapses, and I handled them fine. So like three of them very nicely, and one of them I would say okay-ish, but without a big trouble. Still, every time I was thinking about, is this really the thing that you will be doing the next years? Maybe you should go back to a more comfortable wing. This was my gut feeling. And in this particular flight, I also suppressed my gut feeling again, which actually told me, hey, the air is quite unpleasant here. Maybe it's time to just turn around and fly back, because yeah, something's maybe off, or maybe, I don't know. This area was really a bit unusually turbulent. I have never experienced that bad air there. But I still decided to continue my flight, suppressing this gut feeling. And that, again, was a confirmation that wasn't the right decision. So if your gut tells you, "Hey, something is off," maybe you should put or should listen to that.
And then you also say deploying a reserve is a skill in itself. Well, yes, it is.
Yes, it's just it can be seen in my video. I just didn't deploy my reserve correctly. Well, because of this false assumption from me that I shouldn't deploy it with full power, it was indeed a mistake. But it is like I told you, it's a skill. So I haven't thrown my reserve at all, not even an SIV course, just to see how it works.
Would it be a good thing to throw it during an SIV course?
Well, looking back now, I would probably say yes. You should throw it at least once, just to see how everything works, like how long it takes, and maybe you will make this mistake with your first throw and won't throw it exactly right, and your instructor will explain you, "Hey, do it in a different way." So. Yeah, again, we started this discussion with one of the learnings, which was training is key. And this is exactly what applies here as well. Like throwing a reserve also requires some training.
You mentioned that watching the footage afterwards was painful.
You know, there are several YouTube channels that do analyze some collapses or some incidents where some pilots explain, "Hey, here is a wrong control input. You should pull more here, release sooner there, and maybe here a bit of weight shift. And here the wing is stalled and the wing collapses again, and doing that and this would make things better." This is exactly what I was doing. So I was looking at myself and thinking, "Who is that? What this guy is doing? Everything is wrong." So I saw every single wrong input, and I knew every single answer to what I should have done in every single frame of the video and what I should have done differently. And that's the problem. So like I was watching myself doing bad stuff, not knowing why I did that. So that was painful.
Yeah, but you were in the wild, and yeah, then the element of surprise is always present.
Yes, this is how I explained everything to me, like this surprise, this unexpected event, and also everything kind of a bit of lack of SIV training or the lack of collapses training. You know, I didn't have too many collapses in my flying career. I have maybe over 1,600 flight hours in general, maybe more. And I all throughout these 1,600 hours, I had, I think, 12 collapses, like the big ones. And it's just not enough for training, no? And that's the problem. So you kind of you train the active piloting and you can stop all the things, but every wing will collapse sooner or later. Yeah, we can just beat physics. That's the thing. I think that's what happened. I just got caught by surprise, put behind my wing, and did everything wrong with my control inputs. I think the main goal of an SIV training is to train the general pattern, like how you should react to particular things. You cannot really train the exact same situations that will be happening in your real flights. That's impossible. But the thing is just to explain, like to train your body to perform particular movements, you know, in some situations. And that's the most important thing, I believe. Because as I mentioned, when it hits hard, you don't have time to think. You don't have time to recall on the things you read somewhere or, you know, trained somewhere, your body will react automatically, like an instinct. And so we need to train these kinds of movements so that it happens automatically. I don't think that the main target or the main thing of the SIV is to give you more time. I think it's rather to train this kind of movement sequence.
What impact has this incident had on you as a pilot?
Well, it's a good question because I summarized a bit of it in the end of the video. So I will definitely be stepping down to a less demanding wing. It's actually a thing I should have done a bit earlier. That's one thing. The second thing, I have flown some other wings currently and some small routes as well. And I'm not just comfortable as in the past currently, probably because my body still has some, memory. And I think I prefer to skip all the turbulent days at the moment and rather choose a bit more easy days for flying. But I still hope I will get back on track soon and will continue flying.
Yeah.
Actually got a very interesting comment on YouTube about that. There was a guy who was really suggesting me to take my time and to process everything that happened so that it won't throw me out of the story entirely. I think so I will follow his suggestions for sure. As I mentioned, I wasn't very comfortable in the turbulent conditions, but I also noticed that having a less demanding wing did inspire those very nice feeling again, those very nice feelings again in myself, like what I actually enjoy in flying. You know, less wing control, less kind of shaking around, but more enjoying more joy, more this state of flight feeling. And I think that it's the right thing. I'm currently choosing another wing, and I'm still confident that I will be back on track.
Excellent. What advice would you like to leave our listeners with?
When you do paragliding, just think about what you want to do out of it. If you will take it as a true sport, like you want to compete, you want to achieve some goals, you want to break records and stuff like that, then you need to invest a lot of time into training, into proper training. Otherwise, it's just too risky, too dangerous from my point of view. So even though nothing happened in the past, doesn't mean that nothing will happen in the future. And you can watch my video just to see, you know, I was entirely sure I was prepared and I was ready and I did have everything under control, but I didn't. That's the thing. But if you don't want to compete, if you don't want to be number one on X contests of the year 2026, maybe you don't have to push that much and just to think about what motivates you to take off. What are your main wishes in the air? Do you really want that hot wing to have a bit more glided, a bit more speed? Maybe you just want a bit more comfort or a bit more time for observing the landscapes around you, something like that. So this is the question we should ask ourselves. I'm not against competitions. I'm not against records and stuff. It's natural thing to compete, but I think our entire community is a bit too much focused on performance, on achievements, on stuff like that. So you read the news, new record to 400 kilometers, and everybody celebrates all the big triangles or the twisted infinity tumblings, whatever. So everyone want to kind of impress and achieve, and we all celebrate that. But everybody forgets about just normal flying, enjoying, you know, this state of flight, maybe some non-record flights, just something to be in the air and enjoy the views around you. So we just keep asking ourselves this question, what's the reason I'm here in the air? And maybe depending on the answer, choosing the way of paragliding.
Did you forget it as well a little bit?
Yeah, as I mentioned, I was suppressing my gut feeling quite a lot. Both when choosing my gear and when pushing the flights. Maybe it was one of the reasons as well for the incident. So I definitely reconsidered that, and I will do. That doesn't mean I won't be flying XE routes anymore, that I stop recording my XE stories. I will continue, and I am entirely sure I will also fly the big triangles anyway. We just have to decide for ourselves what brings us in the air.
Thank you very much, Dimi. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. And I wish everyone safe flights. And just check out my YouTube channel if you want to.
I will put a link in the notes.
Thank you.
And that's it for this episode of Paragliding Chat. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Dimitri and found it as interesting and insightful as I did. If you enjoyed the episode, please consider leaving a 5-star rating or a review in your favorite podcast app. It really helps other pilots discover the show. And if you'd like to support Paragliding Chat, you can make a small donation. This podcast is a passion project that I produce in my spare time, so every contribution helps me keep it going. Thank you very much for listening. Until next time, enjoy your flights and stay safe. Happy landings. Bye for now. Thank you.